Chapter 17. Not really that simple. A few years ago, a young couple came into my office for their first session of marriage counseling, and right away I could tell that the husband didn't want to be there. He took one look at me, and by the expression on his face, I could just imagine what he was thinking. Great, just great. Our last therapist was a man, and he seemed pretty good, but my wife didn't think he was helpful, so now we're going to talk to a female counselor? Oh, brother. Here we go again. Only this time, I'm going to get it in stereo. Okay, suck it up, buddy, and get ready to go 3 rounds with not one, but 2 women hammering away at you for the next 45 minutes. And at the end of it, you get to write the woman a check. I'm such a lucky guy. His wife appeared a little anxious and a lot frustrated. She began with a very intense explanation, even before they were seated. He never talks to me. In fact, all I get is the cold shoulder. Whenever I try to discuss an issue, he tunes me out. He just sits there staring at the TV. Sometimes he gets up and storms out of the room without saying a word. He's just so insensitive. I don't know how I see this marriage will ever work if he's not willing to talk about things. I'm ready to give up. I've tried everything I can think of to get him involved with the family. How can he not care about his own wife and family? I listened patiently to her lament, and out of the corner of my eye, I could see her husband slowly sinking into his end of the sofa. I nodded understandingly at his wife, then said, "I can see how hard you're working at this, trying to make your marriage work, and how distressed you are. This is really, really hard for you." Anticipating my alliance, she sat up straighter and listened intently as I joined in her frustration. Being in a painful relationship is incredibly difficult, I know. You know what else? We've actually been lied to. Her husband continued to sink a bit deeper, while a slight smile stole across his wife's face as she waited for more confirmation of what she thought she already knew, that she was right and he was wrong. Yes, I continued, we've been lied to. We've been led to believe that men are insensitive jerks. That they're not in touch with their emotions, if they even have any. That they just don't get it. It's like the elevator doesn't stop on that floor. But the truth is, men are actually more sensitive than women. The wife tipped her head sideways, like a bright-eyed cocker spaniel, who couldn't believe her ears. I imagine she thought, what? This can't be right. This woman is not going to be helpful. She obviously doesn't know anything about men. Anticipating her confusion, I supported my statement with some research findings, and she appeared to be a little more interested. I imagined she was thinking, well, maybe she does know a little something about men. Maybe she can fix my husband, or at least get him to talk to me. At the other end of the sofa, her husband seemed to breathe a sigh of relief, sat up a little straighter, and almost smiled. If he had been more verbally inclined at that point, he might have said something like, hey, this woman gets us, guys. This therapy stuff might actually work this time. Thank you, Lord. I just hope my wife pays real close attention. Men do think about their relationships a lot. As we will discover, most men process their thoughts internally before they speak. They're taught to do so. Because they often don't share their thoughts with their partners, women erroneously assume men don't think about the future or devise a plan for getting their families from point A to point B. Nothing could be further from the truth. According to author Gordon MacDonald, men have a lot of serious thoughts about a lot of stuff. This is a quote from his book. Among all these thoughts are the private thoughts. They're the ones I hold on to most tightly for fear that, if exposed, they might show a side of me that almost no one knows or would understand. The side that includes thoughts of possibilities, failures, dreams, fears, desires, shame, beliefs, regrets, memories, both good and bad, and, well, the list goes on and on. End quote. The making of a man, nature and nurture. Researchers and philosophers originally debated about the role of nature versus nurture in directing the process of human development. Findings have been inconsistent in terms of which is more powerful, our biology or our environment. Consequently, they sort of gave it all up and focused their studies on understanding the interactions between these two primary factors. Because psychological experiments on human beings, as well as many animal experiments, are considered unethical, we're left to our observations of what exists naturally within the world, not unlike King Solomon. Without the benefit or the risk of studying cause and effect relationships, we can only recognize correlations among various factors and suggest probabilities. The bottom line, then, is that we can only report what's likely to happen and conclude that we can't really know anything for sure. That is, in applying any research findings to real-life situations, we must admit that it all depends upon a multitude of factors. However, what we learn can be helpful in providing some probable, or at least plausible, explanations for why people are the way they are. The same is true for the information shared here. Although something probably applies to most men, it may or may not apply to your man. Therefore, you are encouraged to summarize what you glean from this book and ask your guy whether or not it fits him. At the very least, he will be flattered that you cared enough to ask. At the very best, you will have had an opportunity to learn more about him. That is always a very, very good thing. Nature. Men are more sensitive than women. Researchers have found evidence that male infants are more emotional than female infants from birth until at least 6 to 12 months of age. Infant boys cry more frequently and intensely. They also coo and smile more often and experience more rapid fluctuations in emotional states than do girls. However, by 2 years of age, there is already a noticeable reversal in verbal expression. And by 6 years of age, there's a noticeable difference in facial expression as well. Furthermore, boys seem to have a natural tendency to express their feelings more through action than by talking about them. Whatever the reason, boys demonstrate an ability to avoid overt responses to emotion between 4 and 6 years of age. Interestingly, about the time they usually enter kindergarten. We'll explore some more possibilities about that in a moment. Let's fast forward to adulthood. Once they grow up, do men even have feelings anymore? Or have they simply been disconnected from their own emotions? Marital research conducted over the past several decades suggests that men really do have feelings, very strong ones, and that they are highly aware of each and every one of them. In one particular study, couples volunteered to be observed interacting with one another. Video cameras recorded their spontaneous interactions, and researchers coded their behavior for analyses. Over time, the researchers began to notice that some participants tended to be very emotionally expressive, in other words, visibly and audibly upset or angry during a disagreement, whereas their partners were not. So the researchers devised a method to help determine what might be going on that wasn't directly observable. They asked the couples to sit in facing chairs and instructed them to discuss something about which they disagreed. Each person was connected to equipment that registered respiration and heart rate, as well as how much each wiggled in the chair. The data they collected showed that, although the seemingly non-responsive partners appeared to be totally cool and calm, their heart rates frequently rose above 95 beats per minute when things got tense. Interesting, eh? It appears that cool and calm on the outside does not equal cool and calm on the inside. I found in counseling a wide range of couples, it's often the men who are most successful at appearing to maintain their composure. They may not be emotionally expressive, but their bodies sure are. So it's no wonder that men often fail to respond verbally. They're probably too busy regulating their pounding hearts. After all, we know that one of the rules of manhood is never let them see you sweat. And if men take action when they feel emotions, well, a pounding heart is part of the fight or flight response. Which of those responses do you prefer when it comes to you? So what about nurture? Going back to attachment theory in Chapter 9, you'll recall that healthy human development relies heavily upon the processes of relationship, especially upon our primary need for emotional connection with someone who is available and responsive to our needs. However, boys typically experience relational trauma that girls rarely do. It usually goes something like this. As a toddler, he got picked on by another kid at the park, and his mom or dad held back to see what he would do. When he came to report the offense, he was required to provide explanation. His tears were something shameful. Big boys don't cry, so stop whining and figure out what to do. He learned that he was on his own, that he would have to solve his own problems somehow. Childhood was a very different experience for him than it was for you. He knew he had friends because of their shared activities, unlike you and your best friend in childhood who shared intimate secrets. He was busy hanging out with a whole gang of guys who did stuff together. No secret sharing. And according to research psychologist Dr. William Pollack, every boy learns the boy code as a matter of course. Number 1. Be a sturdy oak. Whimpering, crying, complaining, or any sign of weakness is strictly forbidden. Give 'em hell. Number 2. Risk-taking behavior of a macho, invincible, sometimes violent, high-energy Superman is encouraged. Number 3. Be the big wheel. Dominate others and refuse to let anyone know you actually feel like a failure or like life is out of control. Number 4. No sissy stuff allowed. This last commandment is what Dr. Pollack believes prohibits boys from expressing any feelings or urges that might be viewed as feminine, such as dependence, warmth, empathy. Great, huh? Where's mom? Mom is usually our first relationship, and until the boy reaches about 3 years of age, his relationship with his mother is very similar to that of a girl with her mother. Then sons and mothers begin to relate to each other in a different way than do daughters and mothers, and the vulnerable feelings that arise around this disconnection may have very profound implications for the rest of male development. American culture, in general, supports this disconnection, which researchers refer to as normative developmental trauma, which a girl isn't required to experience. A boy is pressured to disconnect from his mother, usually through shaming by other boys and men. In addition, his mom is expected to support his turning away from her, even if she feels it's wrong to do so. He must be declared different from her, compares himself to others, tries to be unique, and feels bad when he is unsuccessful. Perhaps as a consequence of her own misunderstanding of men, a boy's mom is usually the one to fit him with his first gender straitjacket, through emotional shaping that begins at birth and continues throughout the lifespan. In the process of attachment and frequently traumatic separation, she actively, though often unwittingly, participates in the hardening process that shames boys into suppressing their empathic and vulnerable sides. One of the first things a mother wants to know is whether the child is a boy or a girl, and as soon as she knows, the process begins. Dr. Steven Bergman also noted, often the boy is taught not to listen to his mother trying to maintain connection, or to listen with a certain suspicion, and if he does listen, not to respond to her. As a result, he may become paralyzed, both emotionally and relationally, by his own ambivalence, his intense longing for close emotional connection, and the fear of his vulnerability at the same time. Very confusing and sad, and very, very lonely. At this point, he needs to identify with someone, ideally with a caring, available father. However, his father may also be encouraging the mother-son disconnection, be recovering from his own relational trauma, and be unable to provide him with the empathic relationship he so desperately needs. Consequently, the boy moves from a mother connection to a father disconnection. Rather than learning to maintain the emotional ties essential for development, he learns to disconnect from the process of relationship and may never learn how to be emotionally close with another person. Male relational dread. Thus, not having learned to deal with unpleasant emotions in relationship when he was a boy, a man may continue to feel intensely afraid of conflict, as well as disconnection. Bergman labeled this emotional experience using a highly descriptive term, male relational dread. A man's fear is characterized by a sense of inevitable, never-ending disaster and an expectation of immense and irreparable damage. And often the closer a man feels to a woman, the more intense his dread. He feels unsafe, guilty, incompetent, and ashamed in this uncharted territory. Under the pressure of needing to fix things, he is overcome by an ever-increasing sense of dread. Although a man may want connection desperately, he may withdraw, strike out, tune out, change the subject, joke, make nice, or simply fall silent in an effort to deal with his anxiety. Gordon MacDonald put it this way, quote, "Among the first private thoughts in the male are ones that center on the issue of feelings, which most of us are taught should rarely, if ever, be acknowledged. The don't cry, act like a man message comes early in life, and a boy learns to master his tear ducts and force his face into an expression that would make a stoic proud. The feeling may be unbearable, he thinks, but there's no way I'm going to let you know it." From that point forward in the male life, feelings and emotions are increasingly stuffed somewhere. Fear, sadness, anxiety, smugness, anger, joy, loneliness, disappointment. Don't let them be seen. Deep six them. Make them disappear. So far away, so deep, so buried that no one, even I, will ever know they were around. End quote. It's indeed most unfortunate that many men have sufficient evidence from their own relationships with women that disconnection may actually be the better, safer way to go. Men, no doubt with good reason, do not trust women to let go of their false images of men and to accept and appreciate their vulnerability as human beings. However, the good news is that you have the power to change that experience for your man, starting today. Simply learn the truth about how to be a safe person for him. And if you don't know what that looks like, find a knowledgeable counselor who can help you develop the understanding and skill required. You will both be the better for it.